Hello and welcome. Welcome everyone to this live telephone town hall meeting. We have just a few folks on the line right now. Thank you so much for joining us. Please bear with me as I go through this intro a couple of times as we complete our dial out. If you are just joining, welcome. You are live on the line with Adams Electric Cooperative. Please stay on the line here as the call will begin shortly. And you may want to grab a piece of paper and something to write with just to jot down any information that is valuable to you. And during this call, we will be answering questions that have been pre-submitted. Keep in mind that you can check out additional information at Adams Virtual Member Meeting at adamsec.coop. Again, that website is adamsec.coop. So once again, hello and welcome everyone to this live telephone town hall meeting. You are live on the line with Adams Electric Cooperative. Thank you all for joining us today. Please stay on the line. Our call will begin shortly. And during this town hall, we will be answering questions that were exclusively pre-submitted. We do invite everyone on the line listening in today to view the member meeting at adamsec.coop. That's adamsec.coop for any additional information. And now that we do have everyone on the line, I'd like to officially get this call started off by turning it over to Steve Rasmussen. Steve, please take it away.
Thank you, Taylor, and thank you, everyone, for being on the line tonight. I think we have approximately 50 people on this call, and that makes up about mostly members. Our board of directors is on the line. We have a few legislators and some staff members from the legislative offices, a few employees as well. So I want to thank you for joining. I know the weather is really nice outside, and so maybe spending a little time with us isn't the most fun thing to do, but we certainly appreciate you doing so. I think it's important to maybe first start off by explaining this virtual format. Hopefully some of you have made it to our March member meetings in the past. Obviously now with COVID, we can't meet personally at this point in time. So what we did this year was created an online meeting. And that online meeting is very similar to what you have noticed and if you came to a meeting in person in the past. But at the end of that meeting, we always have an open the floor session where we open it up to questions from our membership, and we provide some answers on the spot. And sometimes we have the answers handy. Sometimes we have to get some more information. But we always like hearing from our members. So this has kind of taken place of that portion of the member meeting where we can basically answer your questions. And you were reached out to, and pen lines, we had social media asks, and we basically tried to get as many questions as we could from our membership. And really, only about a dozen questions came in. Wasn't sure what to expect, but I think there were some really good questions. Now, I will say some of those were very account-specific, and what we did with those is started following up with those members today, actually, to try to reach out and answer those questions more on a personal basis. But I do have about another half a dozen questions to answer, and that's what we're going to work on here this evening. So with that, thanks again for joining me, and I'm going to turn it back over to Taylor, our moderator.
Thank you, Steve, and we will get right into our pre-submitted questions in just a moment. I do want to remind everyone on the line that you can visit adamsec.coop to view the virtual meeting and check out additional information. So without further ado, our first question is actually two questions regarding broadband and the co-op's position on becoming involved in offering broadband service. Additionally, are there any thoughts on partnering with existing companies to offer service?
Great, great question. I know a couple of members had this question and they wanted some information on it. You know, this one doesn't surprise me. There's so much talk about broadband and lack of broadband in certain rural areas, especially with everybody teleworking, schooling from home, all that stuff, dealing with COVID. It's a tough one because as a rural electric cooperative, you know, we started in the 1940s to bring electricity where private power companies wouldn't bring electricity. So broadband is one of those things that, you know, you want to reach out and help your rural members if you can. So there's been some things that's happened in Pennsylvania to allow for that, and the law actually changed about a year ago. And co-ops are now allowed to offer broadband as part of their service. And I just want to remind everybody there's 13 Pennsylvania cooperatives. And just to so you have an understanding of what's happening throughout the state, one cooperative has decided to jump in and is actually starting to build infrastructure to provide broadband to their members. Another one will be probably joining them, I would say, shortly. Two others are considering it, and then there's 9 of the 13 that are just reluctant and hesitant for a couple of reasons. So those 4 co-ops that I'm going to say that most likely will get involved in some capacity, what I found talking to their CEOs is about 50% of their members don't have access to high-speed internet. And that's a large percentage of members. So that's really why they're looking to get into it. So let's talk about the Atom situation. We have looked at it several times through the years. About 15 years ago, we did a real in-depth study, and we found out at that point in time that about 70 to 80% of our members had access. Roughly 10% really didn't care, and I think that percentage stays pretty close to the same at this point in time. For whatever reason, they don't want to have access to the internet at a high-speed level for whatever reason, and that's okay. We understand it's not for everybody. So it leaves really about a 10 to 20% of our membership that may be interested in taking internet, high-speed internet service from some company, whether it's Adams or some other company. That really makes it a small market, maybe 3,000 to 6,000 people. And the other thing we noticed when we did our real in-depth survey is it's really scattered pockets throughout our entire service territory. So that means you still have to build a lot of infrastructure in order to reach those members. And with that small potential revenue stream and a really high cost of deploying it, at this point in time, it really doesn't make sense in the Atom service territory for us to get involved. When you talk about internet, it's not a simple thing. I mean, you've got to put potentially larger poles in. You've got to, you know, run new lines. All new employees, because our employees aren't familiar with that type of technology. You're going to have to borrow money. You're going to put your current equity and your current members' money at risk to get into this new venture. It basically is like starting a whole new company. And it would probably take, I would say, several years to build out to reach all those members. One of the concerns also would be the technology that if we chose to jump into this business, it could very much be obsolete in the 2 to 3 year time period that the build-out would occur. So it really doesn't make sense for us at this point in time to do it on our own. But one person, I think, did ask about partnering and should you partner with another company to find a way to reach out. And that's exactly what we're doing at this point in time. So we've signed 2 non-disclosure agreements with 2 different companies who wanted information about our poles, our lines, where we serve, so they could kind of analyze if it made sense for them to jump into this market. Now, we did not share any member data. It's just our data dealing with poles, pole sizes, things like that. And that was last fall. And thought one of the companies was going to come forward with some information over the wintertime, and they still haven't come forward. So we're basically waiting and in a holding pattern. But we're interested in working with folks because we really do want to help get internet access out there. We just don't think we're the company to do it. So we will keep talking about that because we know it's a very important issue for our membership. So thank you for that question.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Looks like for our next question here, we had 4 participants who had asked questions regarding solar power, so I'll kind of group them together the best I can. In what ways will Adams Electric support solar power installations on our homes? Also, is it possible for the co-op to begin a relationship with some installers of solar systems and create savings and or incentives for homeowners? And might the co-op consider group purchasing of solar backup battery systems?
Yes, and all those are great questions, and solar remains another hot topic in our industry, in the news. A lot of folks want to do a more renewable approach to electricity, and we certainly understand that. Now, Adams is a distribution cooperative, so we're really concerned about distributing the power. So we get our power from other places. So when we talk solar power, most of the time we are talking about solar interconnections with our members and their members' homes or businesses. And we basically have been supporting solar projects since 2007. Currently, we have about 225 residential members who have an interconnection with us. And there's larger five accounts that are commercial that are a little bit larger. So there's a little less of them, but they are tend to be bigger projects. So we offer net metering for members. With that, we do monthly banking. So that means if we're not buying the power on a monthly basis, it rolls over the following month, and there's a ability for that member then to offset the power that they could have sold back into the grid, if you will, but they offset it at a retail level with us, which is a very big benefit for the members that have solar systems. Annually, we true that up, though. We have to basically reset that to zero and move forward, and we do that on an annual basis, basically because it ties in with our budget and everything else. Our rates get kind of revamped, if you will, on an annual basis and tweaked maybe. So it just makes sense to do an annual banking. I know some of the folks out there want that annual true-up to not be there and really continue to bank every month. But solar is one of those things where you've got to find a good balance between helping out the folks that are installing solar, but not having it being subsidized by the other members who don't have solar. And that's really what it boils down to, and it makes it very difficult because there's different people with different ideas on how it should be done in the fairest way possible. So we're constantly looking at it and working through that. If a member does interconnect a solar project, there is a possibility to get up to about $5,000 for certain costs of that installation. That's a grant through our statewide association, the Pennsylvania Rural Electric Association. So we do work with our members when they're doing installs to see if we can help get some of those costs reimbursed for them. So that's kind of what we do as far as support. The question that deals with the relationships to try to create some savings or incentives for homeowners by working with certain installers, you know, that's in theory sounds great if we could possibly do that. But the problem we run into with that and why we've decided to shy away from that, the companies are constantly changing. It's really bizarre. We have 225 residential interconnections. And talking with our folks in-house who go out and meet with the homeowners and sometimes meet with these installers, we've probably met 40 to 50 different companies. Sometimes it's the same people working for a different company. Sometimes the companies are bought by other companies. Sometimes they go out of business and start a new company. It's really hard to develop a relationship with those folks that are constantly changing like that. And the other thing we've noticed is they really don't like to offer discounts, even if you're trying to help get them a group discount and by working through your membership. You know, they say 225 interconnections in about 14 years. It really isn't a lot, so there really isn't much incentive for them to try to put in 100 or 200 or 700 systems in a given year because it's not going to happen with the cooperative because we just don't have that many people that are interested in solar. So we've been trying to stay away from that kind of partnership or that kind of recommendation and just let our members work through who they feel comfortable as an installer. But what we always want to do is work with our members to make sure what they're being told by these installers is accurate, because sometimes there's a lot of misinformation, promised rebates, promised discounts on electric bills that don't always transpire. So our hope is that before any member moves forward with them, they check with us and work with us and walk through the math to make sure they know exactly what's going to happen on their bill. I just take a moment to say that the net metering law that I discussed, what that deals with the monthly banking and the annual true-up, I know that's something that's going to be sunsetting in the state of Pennsylvania. I think it's within a year or so, might be a little bit longer. And I know there's going to be new rules. I think there's a lot that folks are looking at as far as cross-subsidies. Are the people that are putting solar systems in, are they making sure that everyone who doesn't have solar systems aren't giving them too much money and revenue back? So there's going to be a lot changing in this regard, and certainly we'll be on top of it and there to help our members along the way. And I think the last question on that, and this was definitely a long one, so sorry about that, deals with the backup battery systems. And I'm going to expand that a little bit. I think the question was more geared towards solar, but there's battery systems that are being deployed that can not only can help the solar accounts, help them charge a battery when their solar system is running, use it after hours if they so choose, keeps them off the grid a little bit longer, things like that. But it really would tie in nicely with our U-Shift, U-Save program. Many of you know that. We used to call it a load control program. We've gotten away from that. We've got several different components of it where, you know, we do like to move electricity use off peak. And we do that through shutting off appliances. Maybe it's a water heater. Maybe it's a panel that's in place. But if there was a battery backup that could help shut off an entire house, and then you have the house operating off a battery or two, that could really help us shed some load during peak times and save the cooperative and our members money. So we are looking at battery systems. It's been a hot topic for a number of years. The problem that remains is it's really expensive still. It's come down a little bit in cost, but it really needs to come down a lot more for it to work on a residential basis. But it's something that whether our solar folks are interested or maybe our U-Shift U-Save program will be able to utilize someday, we're paying attention. We're looking at it all the time, and we will continue to talk about that as we move into the future. So that was a great, great question.
Yeah, and Steve, thanks so much for touching on each one of those questions. Looks like our next question is, what is going to be done about the over-the-top line maintenance cleanings that destroy huge swaths of vegetation every 7 years?
Yes, yeah, so the first two questions I felt came in and they were pretty positive. This one I felt like the member was a little upset, so I certainly do understand that and the frustration that goes along with our right-of-way program. And, you know, I talk to some members from time to time that do have concerns over it. I also talk to a lot of members that really appreciate it, so it's it's another balancing act. I just want to go on record by saying that the cooperative does love trees. We love them. We understand the importance of them. We just don't want them near our power lines. That's the biggest issue. So let's talk about the program a little bit. It changed back in 2014. It used to be a 5-year right-of-way cycle, and now it's a 4-year right-of-way cycle, so the 7 years was a little bit off. So we've shortened the cycle so that way we get out to every single part of our system, all the overhead lines, every 4 years to make sure that we're basically keeping the trees and branches and limbs and everything away from our lines. We did start in 2014 a more comprehensive approach where we do clear more than just cut. And the whole thought process at the time when we started this program was we were having a lot of major storms, a lot of outages, and we just weren't keeping up. Other utilities, we noticed, were doing a better job of clearing their rights of way, and they were having a better track record with their outage time. So we felt that we needed to do something. And honestly, safety is our number one priority when it comes to this program. The clearing that we're doing now and cutting that we're doing now creates a safer situation for our members, our employees, and the general public. So when I say safety, when you keep limbs away from the lines, and you allow lines to fall to the ground so that way a fault occurs and the line will more likely de-energize itself, that's what I mean by safety. You're keeping things away from the electric lines. You're keeping the electricity more contained. We also create a safer environment when our employees have to go out and restore lines from damage due to outages. So we've seen that. We've seen a safer work environment. We've seen more safe situation when it comes to things near the electric lines. So that's been a very important part of our program and why we changed in 2014. The other item was really our outage time, reducing our outage time, getting better reliability, our members. It's funny, we talk and go through some old records from time to time, and we have some postcards around here that date back to like the 1950s. And someone will write in a postcard, hey, been out of power for 3 days. I know you're busy, but when you get a chance, can you come by and turn that back on? Well, we don't have that anymore. If people are out for 30 minutes, 3 minutes, we get phone calls. We need this power back on right now. It's not a luxury anymore. It doesn't help us live. It's a necessity, and everyone needs it and wants it. So reducing outage time is a very big priority for us. In fact, 2020 was the best year we had in 20 years. And I have to give credit to Mother Nature first, because that's always important. But our right-of-way program is another reason why. And then obviously our employees who work quickly and safely to get the power restored when it does go out. Now March, this past March, was a very windy month, and we did have a little bit of increase in outage time. But had that weather occurred 10, 12, 15 years ago, we would have had 2 to 3 times the amount of outage time. And that's just because of the way trees are, trees grow, and unfortunately, we just have to continue down this path. Now, I will say we haven't had an ice storm in a few years. We haven't had a hurricane in a few years, so now I know I just jinxed us as far as in this fall. But when it comes to a hurricane and ice storms, you know, no matter what we do, we're going to have some damage. We're going to have some situations that occur because we can only trim so far. If we could trim 100 feet on either sides of our lines, we'd have a lot less outages during those major storms. So when major storms hit, it's all bets off because I know we can't trim 100 feet on each side of the lines. I know that won't be acceptable. So in any event, I think what we're doing is reasonable. It's definitely a best practice. I do feel bad that not everybody appreciates the program because I do understand, especially if it's in their area, if it's a section of nature that they want to see less line and more tree, I get that. But it's the right thing to do, and it's going to be a program that we're going to continue on for a number of years. But I appreciate the feedback and the question.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Couldn't agree more. Our next question is, do you provide any incentives for using power off-peak?
Yeah, and that's a really good question. I think it's something that we've had for a number of years. The program's changed names. It's done different things. But that's the You Shift, You Save program I started talking about, answering one of the other questions. And really, in a nutshell, what that program's geared to do is move usage from peak times to off-peak times. Because peak times is when that power is the most expensive. And the cooperative really does care about saving our members money. We are owned by our members. We have that business model that says we're trying to bring you power at the lowest cost we possibly can in the safest way possible, and that's just what we try to do. So this program is geared towards basically shifting when your power is used at your home. And there are several parts to the program. There are over about 7,500 what we call switches on electric water heaters. And what we do is during peak times, we activate that switch, and that turns power off to your water heater, and it saves demand on the system, especially when you have 7,500 of them being turned off at one point in time. Now, what we do is provide that incentive back to the member on the program. So they receive a $10 per month bill credit for allowing us to control. We say control, but it's to move your usage off peak, but control that water heater. Usually, there's enough hot water in that tank to last several hours through the period that we have the switch activated, and there isn't too many issues. That's a great part of that program. We wish everyone in our membership that has an electric water heater had a switch on it. They could save money and have very little hassle in doing so. We put that switch on for free. We also control air conditioning, which is not quite as popular for the program because I know there are some hot summer afternoons that people don't want us controlling or turning that switch on, basically turning off their air conditioning unit. We do turn off the air conditioning unit, but the fans do still cycle on and off. That helps circulate the air within the home, so it does make it a little bit easier to tolerate. But during those months that we're activating those switches, a member also receives $10 per month for those three summer months. Again, the whole idea is to move power away from those peak times when it's more expensive into other times. So I think there's about 1,000 switches on air conditioners right now, roughly. We also control sub-panels. So some people just have one panel where the power comes into their home and all their circuits run off of that. Other people have two, or a sub-panel, which they allow us to then put a switch on it. And when we activate that switch, it turns off everything in that sub-panel. The nice thing about that is we can really reduce the amount of usage during peak times because of more items potentially being used compared to just a water heater. The other nice thing for the membership, though, is that they will receive about a 40 to 45% reduction in the kilowatt hour charge whenever they use power to something tied to that panel. So even if we're not having that switch activated at that point in time, because there's obviously no usage happening then, every other time when that panel's live, those electricity is 40 to 45% cheaper than the regular panel. Now, there are some costs to put a sub-panel in. There's still no cost to put the switch in. We do that for free. But that is a great program if members can take advantage of that. Very similar to that program is the EV Charger program. That's a new program where a member has an electric vehicle. They want to put a charger in at their house so they can charge it. We want to make sure that they're not charging their vehicle during peak times. So we're offering them a $300 rebate to put a switch in so we can activate that charger during peak times so it's not hurting the electric grid. And they also receive that same 40 to 45% reduction in kilowatt hours when they do charge their vehicle. So that's the other part of that program. So off-peak power is wonderful. We promote it all the time. We've got several different ways to take advantage of it, and we would love for our members to continue to take advantage of it and even do more if they could. That was a great question, we really do like talking about that one.
Yeah, absolutely. It looks like we have one more question here for you, Steve. Over the last year, rates, reliability, and the COVID-19 pandemic have been main areas of focus. Could you just provide us an update on these subjects?
I sure can. And, you know, rates and reliability are something we focus in on every year. This COVID thing moving into 2020 was something that was really not on the agenda, but we spent a lot of time on COVID, and I'll talk about that one last. It's my least favorite topic because I think we're all probably tired of talking about it. But I will encourage, too, I'll hit these quickly, but I will encourage everyone, if you can get on our website, if you didn't get a chance to look at the member meeting, the virtual member meeting, I do talk about these three same topics in a lot more detail than I will tonight. I think it's important always to talk about rates and reliability. They're the things that our members are constantly asking about, what's happening, you know, where do we stand, what's going on. The COVID thing is obviously hopefully just a blip for a couple of years, and, well, I'm not even going to say anything more on that. So let's talk about rates. Rates are really looking stable for the next year or two. The energy supply, so if you look at your electric bill, you've got an energy supply. That's the electricity itself. And then you've got distribution service. That's what your cooperative is charging to make sure we have substations that are well-maintained and new ones built when they need to be built. We get the power out to you. We set poles, run wire, do all the things we have to do to get that power to you. That's the distribution side. The energy supply side, I mean, the market, which is where 30 to 35% of our power comes from, is really flat. The rest of our baseload generation really is stable, so that tends to be stable year in and year out. It's really the market that drives potential rate increases in that energy supply area. But that market looks really good right now from what we're hearing from Allegheny Electric is where we get power from. It's a cooperative that all of us own here in Pennsylvania and New Jersey. So unless something really strange happens in the market or causes the market to spike in some capacity, I think we're looking at some really stable rates on the energy supply side of the business. The distribution side, it's always a little bizarre. There's a lot of increased material costs happening right now in a lot of different industries, including ours. We're hoping that that's just a temporary thing and doesn't cause too many issues. But there's always pressure on the distribution side to bump rates a little bit. We're doing the best we can to make those minimal if they do have to occur. But honestly, I really feel like the next year or two, we're going to be in pretty good shape. And I always hedge by saying something could happen that we're not seeing on the horizon. But right now, rates look really, really good. As far as reliability, I did report that 2020 was a great year. You know, we did go back 20 years, and it was our best year on record. It probably goes back further than that, but we don't have easy access to those records. So what we do for that is we continually make upgrades. We continually do pole inspections, our right-of-way program, aerial inspections, all these things that we do on a maintenance basis that we really try to make sure we're doing consistently, systematically, so that way we're not spending a bunch of money one year and then cutting the budget and not spending money the following year. The more proactive you can be and the more consistent you can be in the utility world, the better off you're going to be. And so I think our members see that with the reliability numbers that we've posted. We continually beat the investor-owned utilities around us with our reliability numbers. And as a small utility that really doesn't have a lot of resources like they do, Honestly, it should never happen, but we're glad it does, and we're very proud that it does, and we're going to continue down that path because we know that's important to our members. We can kind of wrap it up here on COVID. Again, I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about it, but I think it's important to know that it really has had a major impact on the cooperative. Hopefully you don't notice it. Hopefully you're happy with rates, you're happy with reliability, and you haven't really noticed it. But honestly, we have, since last year, last March, so we've been doing this for over a year now, we have changed so much operationally, and that's changed on a weekly basis, it's changed on a monthly basis. And really what we're trying to do is keep members and employees safe. And we've had to make some really bizarre decisions, decisions I never thought we would ever have to do. But we've done it. Our employees have responded well. They haven't missed a beat. It's been very, and I get to see it come on the inside, but it's been very, I guess, humbling in a way that we have such great employees that care about the membership the way they do. And I'll tell you, it's been rough and tough at times, but it's also been very rewarding because we got great people taking care of the members. Having said that, we did have to close the district offices over the winter time. It made sense with everything spiking in December and January. We just have opened them up again. We basically wanted to make sure we were open because, you know, this is the time of year where there's disconnections of electric service for non-payment and things like that. We want to make sure we were available to the membership. So they are open, but they're open on appointment only, and it's important to know that. So if you call in, we'll make an appointment. We'll meet with you no matter what the situation is, what you want to talk about, and we will do that. But we want to do that by appointment so we can schedule and make sure we can keep, you know, socially distant and all the right things that we need to do for keeping basically our members safe and our employees safe. And it's most likely that we're going to operate that way through the rest of 2021, and then we'll kind of revisit things and see how it goes as we wrap up the year. Our members still need assistance. I mean, we're still running into members who need help paying their electric bill, even more so with COVID. So one thing I would like to request is those folks listening, we have a roundup on the electric bill. And, you know, we have maybe 20% of our membership on that program. But if we could get 100% of our members on that program, just to round up your electric bill, it's a few pennies a month. It's not going to be any more than $11.88 a year. If everybody did that, if all of our members did that, we would bring in enough money to cover all of our bad debts for the year. We would have no write-offs. And what our membership has to understand is, if we have write-offs, that gets built into rates. So you're paying for it anyway. So if I could just convince all of our members to get on our roundup program so we could collect that money into Project Helping Hand and help the members that need help, it would be a win-win for everybody. So I encourage you to do that if you're not taking part of it. If you do take part of it, thank you. It's a great program. Last but not least with COVID, you know, here we are. We're here. I'm talking to you through a phone system, which is so bizarre to me because usually I'm standing out and at a place that we're having dinner and just talking a little bit and looking at 500 faces. It's just so bizarre doing this. So this is definitely a COVID situation, but it was important for us to reach out and answer your questions. It was important for us to put together that virtual member meeting online so you can go to our website and listen to your board president talk about what's happening at the co-op. You can listen to the election committee chairperson give you a report on the election and what's happening there. So COVID does impact us, and we're trying to make it not so impactful, if you will, by still reaching out to our membership and being able to talk to you. So I will encourage you to join us at our Drive Up annual meeting that's coming up in May. We're going out to all three of our district office locations. We'll be able to see you a little bit more. We're going to, you know, keep you in your car the best we can, keep you social distance, but you can come out. I'll be there. The employees will be there. Your board will be there. Answer any questions you might have then. We're going to encourage you to vote. Only three candidates ran for the board this year. It's opened up for the entire membership to run. We have three candidates. We have three openings. So we know they're going to get elected, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't vote for them because it's still a democracy. It's still a democratic process. So we're encouraging you to do that. There's also something on that ballot, again, because of COVID, we have to do these things, where we're asking for a special member vote to allow the board to sit as the Minute Review Committee to approve the annual meeting minutes from both 2019 and 2020, We typically do that at the annual meeting when we're in person, but since we're doing a drive-through virtual kind of setup for our annual meeting, we need you to vote on that as well. So still important to vote, so please do that. And again, if you want to watch the video on the website, you'll hear more about rates, the reliability that I talked about, and COVID as well. But with that, I think I've taken up a lot of your time, and I'll kind of wrap up here question number five.
Perfect. Thanks, Steve. Yeah, all great things here. And Steve, I do just want to thank you so much for running the show here and providing answers to all these pre-submitted questions. It does bring us to the very end of our forum. So we do want to thank everyone who joined us on the line. Just another quick reminder that you can view the virtual meeting at adamsec.coop to grab any additional information. And you can also sign up for some important email and text alerts. And that website, you go to adamsec.smarthub.coop. So again, we also invite you to visit adamsec.smarthub.coop to sign up to receive those important email and or text alerts. And with that, I'll turn it right back over to you, Steve, to bring us to the finish line.
Sounds great. Thanks again, Taylor, for moderating this for us. We do appreciate that. And thank you for all you members and folks that came onto the line tonight to listen to us and hear the answers to your questions. You don't have to wait for a forum like this. We're always available. You can call in, you can email us. We'll always answer your questions. So please don't ever forget that. With that, I just want to say have a great evening and thanks again for joining us.